Living a well-balanced lifestyle goes beyond ensuring your finances are in order. Welcome to Keeping the Well in Wealthy with Barbara Archer from Hightower. Barbara speaks with wellness industry leaders and related professionals to share more than financial planning advice. She addresses your questions about living a healthy lifestyle at any age. Learn how to gracefully maneuver life's challenges with support and resources to guide you along the way. Barbara and the team at Hightower help you make a plan, make an investment, and make a difference in your own wealth and well-being, and in your families, and within your community. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Well in Wealthy with Barbara Archer, sponsored by Hightower. Now, on to the show.
Hello, I'm Barbara Archer, your host for Keeping the Well in Wealthy, where we discuss living a healthy lifestyle and offering support and resources to gracefully maneuver life's challenges at any age. Thank you for listening, and I hope you are all having a great day. Recently, I stopped at the pharmacy and I was curious. I wondered, how many people read the enclosures with their prescriptions? Are they aware of potential side effects or how a prescription could interfere with other medications? Several years ago, the CDC reported that within 30 days, about 50% of us had used at least one prescription, up to 25% using three or more, and then 13% of us having used five or more prescription medications. So if adjusted for those over 65, it rose to about 89% for one prescription, 67% for three or more, and 42% for five or more prescription medications. With so many of us using prescription drugs, we need to learn more. So I've invited Dr. Laura Challen to be my guest. Laura is a board-certified pharmacotherapy specialist and associate professor at the University of Health Sciences and Pharmacy in St. Louis, where she coordinates an endocrinology pharmacotherapy course. Laura is also an ambulatory care clinical pharmacist at Mercy Hospital's JFK Clinic, assisting with chronic disease management, drug information, training students and residents, and completing research. A graduate of the University of Texas College of Pharmacy, Laura completed her pharmacy practice residency with an emphasis in managed care at the Massachusetts College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. Welcome, Laura. I appreciate you taking the time today to help educate us on the pharmaceutical industry.
Thank you, Barbara. It's my pleasure to be here.
Laura, what inspired you to become a pharmacist?
I had always been drawn to helping people. And I knew as a child, I loved science and math. And so I had originally been thinking healthcare, like maybe I'll be a doctor, maybe I'll be a nurse. Pharmacy had not crossed my mind until I took a career aptitude test in high school. And it came back as pharmacist number one. And I was very surprised.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing.
I know. And I told my parents, I was like, what do pharmacists do? And so I started researching and talking to people about it. And I realized, wow, I can have this whole healthcare field without the gross stuff like blood and fluids as much. And that was very appealing to me. And so I just started researching it and found myself down that path.
You're an ambulatory care pharmacist. So can you please explain what the different types of pharmacists are?
Absolutely. This shocks many people. I think most people think about community pharmacists, you know, in any retail setting. So that could be your grocery store pharmacies, your Walgreens, your CVS. And that's actually only about 30% of pharmacists. The others are kind of spread out. So we have hospital pharmacists. So anytime a patient receives a medicine, a pharmacist has to check the order or they're preparing the medicine. So there's many of us in hospital pharmacies. And then you mentioned that I'm an ambulatory care pharmacist. So that's another subgroup. I work in a doctor's office type setting, and I see patients there for mainly chronic diseases, which I know we'll talk about a little bit later. We also have pharmacists in the pharmaceutical industry. So they may be doing clinical trials or answering drug information questions. We have pharmacists in academia training the next generation of pharmacists. And really, there's a lot of other subtypes.
Is ambulatory care a more recent type of pharmacist? Because obviously I didn't grow up hearing about ambulatory care pharmacists.
Yeah, I would consider it a newer sector. Maybe in the 2000s, it started to become more mainstream, but we definitely do not have a pharmacist in every single doctor's office. I hope we will one day, we're typically more in like your hospitals and training type environments.
Okay, that makes sense. So can you share an experience that was particularly memorable or challenging in your career so far?
I've been a pharmacist almost 19 years, and so there's lots of instances that come to mind. I love it when people make those healthy lifestyle changes after they talk to me. One in particular was a patient had just had a heart attack, and we sat down and had a very candid conversation about their lifestyle choices. And he went into the parking lot and he told me he threw away his cigarettes, stopped drinking the alcohol, and just started losing the weight, exercising, and just came back feeling so much better about himself.
Oh, what a great success.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I found myself in very difficult situations too. One that comes to mind is I've had a deaf patient, and through a sign language interpreter, I found out that they were injecting their diabetes medicine the wrong way because the person couldn't hear the clicks on the pen, and they also had vision problems. We figured out the problem, came up with a solution, and got the patient back to injecting it the right way. Just using creativity, I think, goes a long way as well.
It also sounds like you listen to your patients.
Oh, thank you. All pharmacists listen. And they really do. If you do take the time to talk to them, we try to meet you where you're at. Everyone is in a different situation. And that's what makes it successful. If we listen to what is going on in your life and what you've experienced, we can come up with a solution that will work for you.
Any other stories you might want to share?
I've had a patient, I work also with a retail pharmacy, and they called me and they were like, you know, this person is not filling their prescription. They're coming too soon to the pharmacy. And can you just meet with them and figure out why? And I found out through talking with her, she confided that she was illiterate and couldn't read what was on the prescription bottle. And so I started drawing pictures of suns and moons for daytime or nighttime and got her back on the right track. And so again, using that creativity and meeting them where they're at.
That's terrific. I remember one time my mother came to visit me, and her stomach was upset a lot. And my husband asked her to just take a look at her prescriptions. She had a regular doctor and a specialist for her arthritis. They had both prescribed two different name brands for the same issue, the pain. So she was taking both. So she was double dosing. But again, she never spoke to her pharmacist.
Yeah, that'll be a theme of today. Speak to them.
It is a good thing.
Get that clarification of how you should be doing it and which one you should be taking.
So what are some common misconceptions people have about medications?
I mentioned I work more with chronic diseases. I think.
Can you explain that a moment?
Sure.
Can you give us some examples of chronic diseases so our listeners can identify perhaps with some of these?
Sure. Technically, it's a condition that lasts for 12 months or longer and also requires medical attention. So some top three that come to mind would be cancer or diabetes or some sort of heart condition. So it's something that you're going to live with for a while. So that's kind of my focus. Again, there's pharmacists that focus on different things. But one of the misconceptions with that is that people don't understand that they need to keep on the medicine. Either they don't understand how to refill a medicine, so that's important. Figuring out what number to call, or if you can get into an autofill process, that's helpful, where it kind of just does it on its own, and that's one thing off of your to-do list.
Sure, that's easy when it just shows up at the door, isn't it?
Yeah, it can mail it to you, or maybe you get that reminder text, hey, it's ready. That's good. But again, just kind of staying with the course. So it's not just I'll just do this for a few weeks and it'll go away. That I do need to stay on the medicine if my doctor recommends that.
And I think you mentioned to me earlier, this is a marathon, not a sprint.
Yes, absolutely. This is a marathon, not a sprint chronic stuff. There are things that only require a few days or a few weeks.
Well, those are the good ones because it means we got better, right?
That's so right.
How can over-the-counter medications be problematic when taken with prescribed medications?
So it's really important to mention to your pharmacist that you're either already taking an over-the-counter medicine or even an herbal product, or if you're considering starting, because sometimes, not with all of them, but sometimes they do interact or they don't mix well with your prescription medicines. Some examples just kind of generally speaking, there's so many to speak about. If you're on an anticoagulant or like a blood thinner, certain pain medicines or even cough and cold products can either make you more likely to bleed, or they can throw off your lab values, or perhaps certain cough and cold products or long-term NSAIDs or pain medicines can make blood pressure readings come up if you take them too long over time. Certain antihistamines that you may take for a cough or cold may make you drowsy if you mix them with your prescription drugs. So the advice, the take-home message here is, when in doubt, take that bottle out, bring it up to your pharmacist, or even write down the name of what you're considering starting and being like, hey, does this mix well with what I'm already on?
That's a good question to pose. Now, you mentioned over-the-counter drugs and herbal products. So I guess that's why when I go in for my annual physical, they also want to know all the vitamins I take. Any supplements? Is that correct?
Yes.
Because that can interfere with some things too.
Absolutely. That would be included on that. And I try to ask specifically, like, what other, do you take any vitamins? Do you have herbal products? Because I think that slips a lot of people's mind.
Sure. Because they just think that's maintenance.
Absolutely.
It's not really a drug.
Yeah, have them add it to your list.
Good information. So what should we be aware of to avoid drug interactions with other medications?
Just tell your pharmacist and your doctor. I would tell them both, because, you know, they're all going to be your health advocate and looking to make sure that there are no drug interactions.
Also telling if you have more than one physician and they're not in the same system to make sure they're all told the same information that you're taking, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because not all the systems talk to each other. That you want to be sure everyone has all the information. And we have nice systems. So we pharmacists have computer systems that will automatically run these interaction checkers in the background. I also have access to databases where I can manually put in everything and see if they mix together too.
You mentioned about the person that you drew the sun and the moon on. So how do you ensure patients understand their medication regimens? Someone brought this person to you, so you were able to help correct it. But typically, just the average person that gets their prescription, drives up, throws it into the car, drives away. Not much you can do there, is there?
If it's a new prescription, I would take those extra few moments to either, they should be offering to speak with you. I know it may just be quickly in the drive-through, but take those few moments to say, yes, I would like the pharmacist to come over.
Good.
That's a great opportunity for the pharmacist and you to have that conversation about, how do I take this? How do I store it? That's important sometimes. You know, will it interfere with anything that I'm taking? And what common side effects should I look out for? When is it a side effect that I need to call and report?
You mentioned like storage and how to take it. So should we be reading those enclosures, which sometimes can seem so unsettling, or should we be taking that time then to discuss this with the pharmacist? But what about those package inserts?
I know those package inserts can be long.
Yes. And scary sometimes.
Yeah, they can be. But I would definitely review certain sections at a minimum. And so we mentioned how to store it. Your normal oral tablets are probably fine at room temperature, but there are certain injectables out there that do need refrigeration. You know, is that the one that you have? The common side effects, again, what can I look out for? What to do if I miss a dose? So sometimes it's not that intuitive. So that's always a section that's on there. Again, drug interactions. And I know the laundry list for side effects can be long. It could be scary. Mm-hmm. But also know that anything that happened in a clinical trial, they legally have to list it as a potential side effect. Along with the side effect, you want to look at the incidence or how often it happens. And so if there's a 0.0001% chance, I'm not as confident that's going to happen with someone versus, 30% of people may experience this, then it's going to be more frequent. So not only the side effect, but is it in the common side effect section or is it in the rare side effect section?
Sure. And that's worth even us looking at if we open that up and read it. Looking forward to my next prescription now so I can read more.
And along not only tablets and capsules, but oftentimes we're now dispensing devices or inhalers. And so those inserts will have pictures of how to do it. If you're not familiar with it or your pharmacist, we often have demo products that I will pull out and show someone, this is how you inject it, or this is your new inhaler, and this is how you do it. So that's in the insert, and your pharmacist can also walk you through that as well.
Oh, that's so helpful. Mm-hmm. So is there an advantage to using just one pharmacy?
Oh, absolutely. I think that way you're ensuring that that pharmacist has your entire list. And I know it's tempting. A lot of patients will get online prescriptions or perhaps from some sort of platform. Also, tell your main pharmacy about those. And so they can ensure that it's all, again, mixing well together and avoiding drug interactions.
No, that is important. So as a professional, if you believe someone is being overprescribed, do you ever reach out to the physician or have a conversation with someone about that?
Unfortunately, I think that this happens more commonly than I would like. When we're recommending new medicine, it's important to think about, am I treating the underlying condition or are they treating a side effect of something else? Obviously, I want to avoid the overtreatment. It's called a prescribing cascade. And we want to be treating the condition and not just a side effect of another medicine, which can happen. That's one reason why sometimes people are on too many things that they don't need. So I absolutely do reach out. Now, I'm in a unique setting where I'm with the doctors in the doctor's office. So it's a little bit easier for me personally, but I know community pharmacists make those calls all the time. Let us be your advocate. Even if you're thinking, gosh, am I on too many things? Have that conversation. The pharmacist makes those calls all day long. It's expected. We're all a healthcare team. And so we can absolutely have those conversations.
I'm hoping on this podcast that people are listening to how important it is to talk to their pharmacist. Just don't grab your prescription and leave. Maybe take that 2 or 3 minutes and have a deeper conversation.
Absolutely, especially if it's new.
Absolutely. I agree with you. So prescriptions can be very pricey, though. You and I have talked about this. And should a patient be pursuing a discount card or reaching out to the manufacturer, or can the pharmacist be of assistance in helping with pricing?
Yeah, I know that medicines can be very expensive, and we absolutely understand the need to minimize cost. I think that pharmacists are just as frustrated with the cost as the patients. So a couple of things I want to mention. If you have prescription insurance, your insurance company has something called a formulary. So it's the list of medicines that they prefer. And they will even list it as tier one. So that would be the lowest copay versus higher tiers, which would be a higher copay. Again, every plan is a little different and it'll be a different level. But you
now,
could search.
Before we go past that, would the pharmacist also have that information, or is this something we have to bring to them?
The pharmacist is able to access it. So really, you can just look it up online. I've even Googled certain formulary plans before and pull it up. So I think it could be the patient, definitely the provider, pharmacist, anyone can look it up. It would be easiest if when the doctor is prescribing the medicine, and certain pharmacists do prescribe, any provider that's prescribing would look at the formulary and determine, oh, can I use this lower tier product? Is that going to do the same thing as this higher tier product? So that's one way to keep the cost down, because if you're in that lower tier, you're going to have your lower copay. That's the item that they prefer. If you don't have insurance, you can, there's definitely coupon codes out there. There's different discount websites that will provide certain codes. It's best if you provide those codes to the pharmacy before they run it through and before they prepare the prescription. That's just going to save you time. It's going to save the pharmacy time versus doing it once it's all ready. Then they have to kind of go back and run it back through the system. And so just more time for everyone involved.
For those listeners that might be in a very low income bracket, what kind of assistance can they get?
Those that are in the lowest income bracket, many manufacturers will actually provide the medicine either at a reduced cost or sometimes for free. And that would involve paperwork that typically your doctor's office would initiate or send in. If that happens to be you, mention it. They're called manufacturer like assistance programs. And so many doctor's offices will do that for patients as well.
So people shouldn't be shy about asking for that if they have the need, right? Rather than just not get the prescription.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's a little more work up front. You have to kind of prove your financial status with certain documents, but the reward is there if you need it.
And we also hear about people getting some of their medications outside of our country. So what are some of those risks?
Again, I know it's tempting, especially if you live close to a border, like perhaps near the Mexican border or the Canadian border. I've had family members ask me about this as well. But know that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, as well as the pharmaceutical industry here, has warned us that those countries whether it's Mexico or Canada or even other countries, we just don't know their regulations. And unfortunately, the risk of contamination or counterfeit products is higher. We just kind of recommend sticking to US products because we know of our rigorous standards that we have here.
Yeah, it's good information. Thank you for that. This is something we're often told to take an NSAID or an NSAID. Can you explain what that means and what the different options are?
So an NSAID stands for the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, and those are typically your pain and fever medicines that you see over the counter. Some products technically include aspirin or ibuprofen or naproxen. Those are our three most common NSAIDs.
Okay, so all three of those are the same, similar to
Yes and no. They're all technically NSAIDs, but okay. I actually view them very differently. There are different risks involved in terms of bleeding risks or perhaps stomach upset risks, or, you know, your age would matter. Like, we don't give some for children and some we can. If you're considering a medicine, and I know we typically use them for aches and pains or menstrual cramps or headaches or maybe fever, ask your pharmacist, because it will depend on what you're already taking, your medical history will change my answer of which one I recommend for someone.
Great. Yes. I was just thinking aspirin. You know, many people take a baby aspirin every morning. So,
and that's really more for heart protection versus like pain. And so that's why it's better to, again, talk to your pharmacist, let them know your medical history, what you're already taking. And that will change my answer on like which one I would recommend for you at that time.
Good. What are some of the more common questions you're asked rather than the one I just asked you?
I used to joke that I was like the most popular guest at weddings because people would corner me about their medicine.
Oh, golly.
Which I love. So that's kind of what I hope people ask me. I want you to ask me, how do my medicines work? How do I take them? Do they work well together? Am I on the right thing for this diagnosis? Those are the questions that I would hope you would ask us. And well, probably the most common that I get.
That and understanding that when you start a medication, sometimes it takes a while for it to work. You know, we're always in such a hurry. Okay, I've taken this medication for 2 or 3 days. I don't feel any change. I don't
Absolutely.
See any change.
That's a wonderful point, especially again with those chronic diseases. That would be a question I ask. When can I expect to see some of the benefits? Or how long, when do we think it won't work?
Right.
Have I given it a few months and it's still not seeing an effect? Does that mean I need a higher dose? Or does that mean it didn't work? So excellent point.
And there are many delivery systems for medications like oral, injections, suppositories, creams. How is the best method determined?
Excuse the interruption. I know you're listening to Hightower's Keeping the Well and Wealthy podcast, but if you have questions related to these or other wellness and financial issues, please reach out to your advisor or go to hightoweradvisors.com to find a financial advisor near you. Now, back to Barbara.
It kind of depends on what we're treating. So in the area of focus, let me put it that way. So for example, if someone has like a topical or a skin problem, then that would be a cream or an ointment most likely, assuming that it's not a large surface area that we're trying to treat. Or if patients, I know that most patients prefer oral products, but some of them are not stable in like stomach acid. One example that comes to mind is insulin. We would all love for our diabetic patients to have insulin as a pill, but they've tried and it just is not stable that way. So it's an injectable because that's what we know works to get it into the body. So it also depends on kind of the chemical or the drug that in question, if that makes sense.
Sure. So when we're prescribed a medication, is it based on our particular body mass or age? Because we know they're different for children, but I always wondered, is my husband getting the same thing as I am, who's a bigger guy than I am?
So you're right. Medicines are dosed either based on age or body mass or even how well your kidneys are working or your liver is working. You mentioned children being different. Especially for children, I would say always give the weight of the child to the pharmacist. And so the weight for me trumps the age. And, you know, I'm a mom and I know that my children, sometimes one child is weighing more for the age than the other. Or if you, especially if you have like an extreme on either side, like a 2-year-old that is in the lower percentile for weight or higher than average. So the weight is really important. And I would say for children, I would lean more on weight-based if I can. The other age spectrum, if you're 65 or older, we also tend to start lowering doses for those patients as well. And that can be related to kidney status or liver status. So medicines are eliminated from the body either through the kidneys or the liver. If you have problems with either one, depending on the medicine, we're going to have to reduce the dose as well. So giving them all that information, and it is drug specific. So to answer your question about your husband, it's going to depend on the medicine too.
Okay, sure.
Some are age and some are weight.
To take this a little further, I want to talk about the future of pharmacy, like personalized medicine, because I hear some remarkable advances in the field of pharmacogenomics, or how we each can react differently to medicines that indicate we might be moving away from the one size fits all, like I suggested my husband and I getting the same. So if scientists can now identify glitches in our DNA scripts that reveal what drugs may be dangerous or completely ineffective for certain people, could this information help doctors calculate precise medications and dosages that match a person's DNA? Or do you even see this on the horizon, or are there other exciting advancements?
Yeah, pharmacogenomics is so exciting, and it is already here for certain medicines. So you mentioned that it's the study of how your genetic makeup affects your body process, how it processes certain medicines. It just involves certain genetic testing. And I think that's the barrier right now, is the cost
Sure.
of the genetic testing. And so I don't think it's mainstream for most patients due to that, really, like the barrier of cost.
Yeah, it's the hurdle today.
Absolutely. But I do think for certain healthcare conditions and medicines, we do this. I know it's being done in HIV or certain cancers. We even know the differences for certain medicines for depression or heart disease. The data is there. Again, it's more of that making it available mainstream. I think it'll be more mainstream once we can get that hurdle of cost to make it more achievable.
So how do you see the role of pharmacists evolving with these different types of advancements in technology and healthcare?
Technology is advancing so much. Even in my career, it has changed so much, and it's definitely impacting healthcare. And I also think the COVID-19 pandemic made us kind of rethink how we're doing things. I think about us automating more the physical act of preparing medicines and turning more to that clinical side and using our clinical reasoning and our skills to connect with patients remotely in the future. One example that comes to mind is, again, I keep going back to diabetes because I do a lot of diabetes management, but now we have really made advances in how we're checking our patients are checking their blood sugars. So we have these things called continuous glucose monitors. And that's been within the last few years. But here I am now sending links to patients for them to connect their monitors to me remotely. And I can just log into my computer and see what their blood sugars are doing in real time.
Oh, that's fascinating. So you can actually see
absolutely
where they are. Oh, that's great.
And that's huge. Whereas a few years ago, I would call them up and they would read off the readings of what they're doing with their finger sticks. And here I am now logging into my computer, seeing amazing graphs that are averaging all kinds of things and showing us their target ranges. So that's just one example of how the technology is evolving, and it's making it easier for us to see the whole picture.
That's fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. Laura, this conversation has been so very helpful. Thank you for sharing your expertise on pharmaceuticals and drug management. So just a few things I've picked up today is we have to tell our doctors all of the medications we're taking, both prescriptions, over-the-counter, herb supplements, whatever it might be. And it would be helpful if we would read the enclosures so we are aware of potential side effects and understand how to take the prescription, how to store it, timing, and if it should be taken with food or water, other information in there. And looking at those side effects, not just the list of them, but perhaps how common they are. And then doing our research on the prescriptions to control costs. And most importantly, talking to the pharmacist especially when we have new prescriptions, but also if we have any questions along the way. So, Laura, my last question for you is this. How do you keep your well and wealthy?
First, thank you for having me today. But keeping my well, I think that that's always a balancing act for both myself and I'm sure anyone that's listening to this. Being a working professional, having a personal life with children, and trying to keep healthy. And so I try to enjoy taking walks, especially outside, and just getting into nature to trying to decompress, trying to seek out those activities that bring me joy, whether that's spending time with my husband and children or volunteering, that also brings me joy. And so I just think all of us, including myself, we need to make our health a priority.
I like that you're seeking joy too. That's lovely. Thank you for sharing. So Dr. Laura Challen, we appreciate you joining us. Our listeners can go to our podcast notes to reach you by email. And thank you for tuning in and listening to Keeping the Well and Wealthy with me as your host, Barbara Archer. If you have not yet subscribed to the podcast, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when I come out with a new podcast, it will show up directly on your listening device. We humbly ask you to share this podcast, rate it, and leave a review, as this actually helps others find the show. Again, thanks for listening today. From everyone at Hightower Advisors, this is Barbara Archer, reminding you to go out in the world and make a difference. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Keeping the Well and Wealthy with Barbara Archer, sponsored by Hightower. Click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Hightower Wealth Advisors. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning.
Hightower Wealth Advisors is a group comprised of investment professionals registered with Hightower Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Some investment professionals may also be registered with Hightower Securities, LLC, member FINRA and SIPC. Advisory services are offered through Hightower Advisors, LLC. Securities are offered through Hightower Securities, LLC. This is not an offer to buy or sell securities. No investment process is free of risk, and there is no guarantee that the investment process or the investment opportunities referenced herein will be profitable. Past performance is neither indicative nor a guarantee of future results. The investment opportunities referenced herein may not be suitable for all investors. All data or other information referenced herein is from sources believed to be reliable. Any opinions, news, research, analysis, prices, or other data or information contained in this presentation is provided as general market commentary and does not constitute investment advice. Hightower Wealth Advisors and Hightower Advisors LLC or any of its affiliates make no representations or warranties expressed or implied as to the accuracy or completeness of the information or for statements or errors or omissions or results obtained from the use of this information. Hightower Wealth Advisors and Hightower Advisors LLC assume no liability for any action made or taken in reliance on or relating in any way to this information. The information is provided as of the date referenced in the document. Such data and other information are subject to change without notice. This document was created for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed herein are solely those of the authors and do not represent those of Hightower Advisors LLC or any of its affiliates. Hightower Advisors LLC or any of its affiliates do not provide tax or legal advice. This material is not intended or written to provide and should not be relied upon or used as a substitute for tax or legal advice. Information contained herein does not consider an individual's or entity's specific circumstances or applicable governing law, which may vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction and be subject to change. Clients are urged to consult their tax or legal advisor for related questions.